Welcome beyond the Reiki Gateway. I'm your host, Andrea Kennedy. Like countless others, Reiki found me when I wasn't even looking, and then it ignited a whole new world of questions. This podcast explores topics of interest for the spiritually curious. Join me for discussions and special guests on subjects such as past lives, crystal healing, spiritual awakening, ascension, energy healing, and more, all to assist and inspire you along your unique soul's journey. This episode is sponsored by Mainstream Reiki, offering live and online Reiki classes and a membership community to help Reiki practitioners succeed and grow in their practice. Find out more at mainstreamreiki.com. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Beyond the Reiki Gateway. I'm Andrea Kennedy, and I have with me Dr. Jennifer Lisa Vest. She's a practitioner, a teacher, and an author in the realm of intuitive healing and ethical psychic practice. With over 12 years of experience as a medical intuitive, Dr. Vest has guided countless individuals through the labyrinth of their health mysteries, helping them heal and align with their true life purpose. Her skills extend beyond her intuitive capabilities into mediumship, trance channeling, reading the Akashic Records, Reiki, and past life regression. Her book, The Ethical Psychic, is a groundbreaking guidebook for ethical practice and intuitive work across modalities. She brings a unique blend of intuition, logic, and academic expertise to her healing practice. And I'm thrilled that you're here. So thank you so much for joining us here beyond the Reiki Gateway.
Thank you so much for having me.
I found out about you and your book. And of course, I had to order your book because I just don't think we have enough conversation and teaching around ethical practice. And so many more people, I think, are interested in learning energetic modalities. And in your bio, I mentioned Akashic Records. So we've got so many more people learning different modalities. But I am concerned a bit because I don't think we teach enough about the ethics that is involved in responsible practice. And so I'd really love to get into that with you. But first of all, I guess I'm a little curious, and probably our listeners are too. Where are you? And if you can share a little bit about your background and when did all this start for you?
I'm currently in Long Beach, California. For me, it started at birth. For as long as I can remember, I had a lot of experiences. I had spirits, seeing spirits in the hospital where I was born. I had spirit teachers who would take me out of my body at night as a child and take me to spirit school. And they would take me also around the world and to the future and the past. Just kept reminding me of why I came. Despite that fact, I wasn't super comfortable with my gifts when I was young because other people weren't comfortable with them. And so I had a kind of love-hate relationship with them and I tried to keep them a secret. I do have people in my family on both sides going back in the generations with gifts, but I wasn't being raised by those people. And so I was really trying to be an intellectual most of my life. And so I was just pursuing an academic life and trying to keep this part of myself quiet. But I just kept getting pulled into trainings by teachers, not that I was choosing, but that they kept choosing me. So I have a mixed background. And so a lot of the training I received is related to my background. And so I received training in Caribbean traditions in Trinidad and Jamaica. And I also received training in Native American traditions in Native American Sweat Lodge, where I was trained as a firekeeper. And then I was also trained by the spiritualists in the United States. I just got a lot of different trainings. And at a certain point in my life, I got sick and I went to a medical intuitive and she told me that if I didn't take my gifts seriously and develop them, I was going to stay sick.
Oh.
And so that's what had to happen for me to really totally embrace them in a more public way. And so after I got that message, I started taking a lot of classes. And prior to that, I had been trained by different traditional teachers that had just kind of grabbed me and said, oh, you have a gift, we're going to train you. But at that point in my life, it was the first time that I said, I'm going to start looking for teachers. I'm going to start developing. And that's when I started going to psychic classes and mediumship classes. And that's when I then studied Reiki, studied past life regression with Dolores Cannon, and studied channeling. Just took a lot of classes to develop my various gifts. And eventually, left my academic career behind, became a full-time medical intuitive. And then from there, I just started doing a lot more. I branched out to do the Akashic Records, to do past life regression. I then started teaching everything that I do. And I also started running ceremony. And then most recently started writing books about what I do.
Right. Yeah. So you mentioned that you weren't raised by those individuals in your family that were, I'm going to say, more in tune with your gifts. I hope I'm putting that in some okay words there. And so your life at home then, were you surrounded by people who weren't in tune, intuitively and not seeing things?
It was a mixture. My childhood was exciting. I lived with different people. So my mother actually was an intuitive, but I only lived with her the first 9 years of my life.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. And so when I was young, she did encourage me. And I also had a great grandmother who also picked me out as the person in my generation who had the gifts.
Oh.
But I was separated from my mother at age 9, and then my great grandmother died at age 10. And so at that point, I was then being raised by people who didn't respect these type of gifts at all. In fact, I had an evil stepmother who was always threatening me with a loony bin.
Oh.
Because I would make predictions or have dreams or talk about things. And so I learned very early not to talk about them. I got teased by other kids. And so I learned at that age, once I no longer had that support, to keep it quiet. And I became kind of conflicted at that point about my gifts.
Right. Oh, understandably so. My goodness. This book, I know you've written other books, but this one, I just have to say, this is the one that spoke to me. And I thought, this is a conversation that I think we need to have. And it's about the ethics. And so you've had so many trainings. You have such a wide breadth of experience in these different fields. Why this book? Can you share what led to this book?
I was teaching at the time in Long Beach. And I had this class that I was teaching every Wednesday night for about 5 years. And it was a psychic development class I called Develop Your Sixth Sense to Shift Your Consciousness. Later, I called it just Conscious Psychic. And I was teaching people, a lot of different things to develop their clairs and whatnot. But I was also really emphasizing ethics. And what I kept hearing from students was nobody else talks about this. When they take classes with other teachers, nobody talks about this. And I also had just a lot of experiences working as a professional psychic and medical intuitive and healer. I worked at different, I volunteered at different places. I worked at different metaphysical bookshops. I worked for different people before I worked for myself. And over the years, I just kept having experiences with other psychics who were not so ethical. And I also had some students who left my class because they thought that I was focusing too much on ethics, and they kind of went off and got involved in the dark arts. And, it didn't go so well for them. I really saw that there was a need for this. It wasn't enough for me just to be teaching my little class. And the book was really largely channeled. Like my guides really, I sat down and wrote the first draft of the whole book in just a few weeks. And I felt just very inspired, like it was something that needed to reach a lot of people because it's just not out there. There just weren't books like this out there. People weren't teaching. Of course, some people are teaching it. And what I noticed, is I had a variety of teachers, because I've had so many trainings. I continue to always seek out trainings and teachings, and I read a lot. What I noticed was, you know, I had some teachers who really emphasized character, and that was more the indigenous teachers. In the Caribbean where I was trained, in the Native American traditions where I was trained, in the African American traditions where I was trained, character was always emphasized. And then when I was taking more mainstream classes, that wasn't the case. It was the case with my Reiki teacher. She did really focus on character. It just seemed like there wasn't enough out there on that, and that I needed to reach a bigger audience with what I was teaching. And so that's why I wrote the book.
Can you give a couple of examples of, you had mentioned your experience and experiencing things that you'd characterize as unethical. Can you give a couple of examples of what you ran across?
I do tell a lot of these stories in the book. I had an early experience where I was working for a metaphysical company. That was kind of a big deal. It was one of those kind of places that has several locations where they sell books and crystals, and they have psychics and healers working, and they even have classes. And it was my first kind of big job in the field. I had been doing lots of, you know, volunteering in little bookstores and this and that. But as I was getting started, I got this kind of big job working for this metaphysical franchise. They were very successful. They were excellent at marketing. They had a lot of people. They were making a lot of money. And while I was there, I was doing readings for them, and I was also doing healings. They had a store where they sold, you know, crystals and candles and books and things. And while I was there, I became aware of the fact that they were putting spells in their candles so that people would keep coming back to the business. You know, I didn't think that was right, because the people buying those candles, they didn't know that's what they were buying. You know, they were going in there and saying, oh, look at this pretty candle, or this is a candle for abundance in my life, or whatever. They would be labeled with different things. And that's what they thought the candle was charged with or dressed with. But in fact, it was dressed with this other spell just to benefit the business. They were also mistreating some of their employees in the name of business, you know, to maximize profits. You know, that was one example. I had another experience with an owner of another psychic business who was doing drugs in the space and calling it a ceremony. So this is somebody who wasn't trained, wasn't a highly developed psychic. This is somebody who was essentially a student at the very beginning of their journey, who owned a shop and started to kind of have their own ceremonies, you know, in quotes, where they were basically just doing drugs. And as a result of that, they opened a portal in the shop. When I confronted them about it, they refused to take responsibility. They weren't concerned about the impact it might have on the students I was teaching in the space. And some of my students got hurt. Not when I was present, but I had a class where I ended class, and some of my students decided to do a healing without me, which they shouldn't have done. You know, that's arrogance, right? When you're not ready, but you're like, I'm ready. I'm going to do this. I don't need the teacher. And they decided to do it after I had left the space. And because there was a portal in space, some of the people got hurt. And so I thought that was another clear example of somebody not really being careful with their gifts and not really thinking about how they might harm others. That's really the focus of the book, is if you have psychic gifts, there's always the potential that you can harm others with your gifts, because it's a kind of power. Being psychic is a kind of power that you have over other people, and power can always be abused. And it doesn't have to be intentional, right? It can be that you're just not being careful, and you're not being vigilant, and you're not thinking all the time about, how can I make sure that my practice doesn't harm anybody? When I thought about those situations, that's what I realized. In one case, they were very intentionally doing what they were doing with no regard for how it might impact people. And in the other case, the person was not trying to hurt anybody, but was just kind of selfishly doing their own thing and not really willing to think about what the consequences might be, especially if it interfered with what they wanted to do. Experiences like that really got me thinking about what would it mean for a psychic to have an ethical practice? What kind of things would people need to know? And like these things that I was telling people, like I was telling that person, and I told other students different things, people didn't always listen. And I saw the consequences. I was just really feeling like this is something that I really need to think about. How can I kind of more systematically lay this out for people so that people who are starting out on their path as psychics and healers, or even people who are more advanced, but are maybe up-leveling their practice, like they're starting a business or they're engaging in some new modalities, how can they take steps to make sure that they don't inadvertently harm somebody? And so I just kind of thought through all of that and tried to create a very accessible guidebook that anybody could read and get a good sense of what steps could they take, what kind of risk they have to be aware of, what kind of practices should they consider engaging in.
Part of me is still several minutes in the past, and I want to ask you about this. The situation where the portal was opened and the students went ahead and they did the work there, and you used the term a couple times that they were harmed. And I'd be very interested in you sort of sharpening focus on what are some of the ways in that example and others. What can happen? How are we harmed by this?
Yeah, I have a whole section in the book on risks. You know, what are the risks of ethical work? And I do have a section on portals and possession. And that story refers to that section where there's danger if you're using your gifts or you're just entering into ceremony without the proper safeguards in place, without, for example, a medicine person there, a ceremonialist, somebody who's there to keep everybody safe. If you don't have those safeguards in place, and then you do things like drugs, what drugs can do is that they can open up holes in your aura. And that can harm you as the person taking the drugs, but it can also allow you to do things like open a portal, because certain plant medicines kind of allow us to communicate with spirit. When you're doing that in the safety of a ceremony with a medicine person who knows how to protect everybody in the ceremony, they're going to guard what spirits communicate with you, and they're going to prevent other spirits from entering into the ceremony. They're going to put up safeguards. If you don't have that in place, then you can create holes in your aura. You can create portals in a room, and a portal can allow different beings to just, it's like just a passageway, a doorway that beings can come into a space. And all the beings that are out there aren't good. They're not all showing up for our best interests. So there are some beings that are mischievous, that like to kind of mess with humans, that think it's funny, like to give us wrong information. And then there's some beings who are earthbound spirits who are really craving certain aspects of the earth life that they were addicted to. And that's why they're still earthbound, that they don't have to be here. When I say earthbound, I don't mean they're stuck, but they're choosing to stick around. And so you have some spirits, if they're addicted to alcohol, drugs, food, sex, material things, their money, they might stick around. And some of them become very obsessed with trying to live vicariously through others. And they can attach themselves to humans in order to kind of have those experiences through them. Whenever you do alcohol or drugs, you're opening yourself up to the possibility that one of those earthbound spirits might attach to you in order to fulfill their own desires. And this is what was happening with this particular person, is that they had developed a couple of, you know, hitchhikers. And what happened then with those hitchhikers is that when they were in this healing circle without me, without anyone to protect them, one of their hitchhikers then jumped onto the person who was on the table, and they got harmed. And so that's one way you can get harmed. The portal was in the healing room. And so I was running a psychic and healing fair at the time. I had to stop doing healings in that room because it wasn't my portal. And I didn't want to spend all of my time in there policing that portal. And my guides told me very specifically, it's not your portal. You don't have to close it. the person who opened it should close it. I could have closed it, but for whatever reason, I think because it was meant to be educational for that person, they wanted me instead to have the conversation with that person so that they could kind of raise their consciousness around these kinds of things. So, you know, running ceremony when you're not ready to run a ceremony is risky for yourself, and it's also risky for the people in your circle. That's one risk. Perverting the will of another is a big risk with psychic work. And so that's where you're using your gifts, and it's has the effect of controlling other people or changing their destiny. And this can be in relationship to somebody who's on earth, who's a human, but it can also be related to spirits. And so you can also affect the will or the fate of a spirit. So for example, in my section on mediumship in the book, I talk about how a medium has to be careful about who they're calling down for conversations, because you can interfere with the progression of a soul. So like when I was trained, a lot of mediums are trained to not call spirits at all, right? So like I was trained by the spiritualist. I spent 5 years studying with the spiritualist, being trained by several mediums. I was a natural medium, but I didn't have control of it. And so after taking classes, I then had control of it, because all my life, I had all these spirits just showing up in my apartments. And, you know, a lot of times they weren't pleasant experience. Sometimes they were, but, you know, dead people showing up, they want you to solve their murder, or they want to talk to you about how they died. It's not always, you know, a good experience. And so once I learned how to control my gifts, I was able to then use mediumship, you know, to help people instead of just having these experiences all the time with hauntings. And one of the things that, you know, my teachers taught me was, oh, you shouldn't call spirits by name. You should just sit with a client and wait and see who shows up, right? And I followed that procedure for the first several years of my practice. But as time went on and my gifts developed and I got clear guidance from my guides about what I was supposed to be doing, I was instructed that I was supposed to do a certain kind of mediumship where I only worked with traumatic death. And in that case, I was able to call spirits by name. And so somebody would come to me and say, you know, my son died traumatically. Can you please bring them through? And I was able to do that work because it was healing for both the client and the spirit, and because it was in alignment with my purpose. Now, when you're calling a spirit in, though, the reason a lot of teachers will tell you not to do this is because you can interfere with their progression. And so you'll have this situation sometimes where people will want to keep calling their dead relatives down again and again, when really that person should be doing other things on the other side. They shouldn't actually be spending that much time on the earth plane answering all of your questions. People can get, you know, kind of selfish. People don't necessarily realize, hey, this isn't a good idea to keep calling, you know, Uncle Frank down every week in your, you know, mediumship circle to ask them more questions. That's not really their path. But a lot of spirits will come because they're wanting to be of service. They're wanting to help out their relatives. They love you. They care about you. They're worried about you. But what I learned after years of working with spirit is that I learned that sometimes I would be calling people and they were otherwise occupied. And so I have the ability as a medium, not just to, you know, call spirits or, you know, communicate with spirit or meet with them, but I'm able to go to the doorway, the death doorway, and to look in. And so I'm able to see what spirits are doing on the other side. And I remember I had this one experience where, this is back when I was seeing clients, and I was seeing clients for a variety of things. I was seeing them for psychic, mediumship, medical intuition. It's when I was first starting out and I was just doing everything and anything that people wanted. People used to say, can you do this? And my answer was always yes. And that was just part of my development, was I needed to try helping people in whatever way I could. And so I had this one client who was coming every week for several weeks because a very good friend of hers had died and had died traumatically. And she had a lot of questions, and she was the one that he had like left his money to. And the family was upset with her because she had inherited and they hadn't, and there was conflict. And, you know, there was a lot of reasons why she needed to come and talk to him. And because he had died traumatically, you know, he was struggling with his passing and going through different things on the other side. And after like the third or fourth visit, when I was calling him down, he wasn't coming. And then I went and looked in the doorway to see, and he was in class. He was in spirit class. And he said, "Hold on, I have to ask the teacher's permission." And he had to ask the teacher, like, "Teacher, can I go down to earth and talk to my friend?" And the teacher said, "Yes, you can, because it's actually going to help you in your development. So you're excused." And that was very enlightening to me, because I realized then that there were reasons why spirits didn't always come, because they had sometimes better things to do, like this guy's in class, right? And at a certain point, I had to tell the client, after a certain number of sessions, I had to say, you know, he can't come anymore. He's got to stay in class now. He's done helping you. But another medium might have just continued to take their money and keep doing sessions with that client, regardless of the needs of the spirit. And that could potentially interfere with their progress if they keep getting interrupted and they're supposed to be, say, doing their life review. Like this guy, that was the case. He was postponing his life review endlessly. And so while I was doing these sessions, I was also counseling him. "Hey, what's going on with your life review? Why haven't you done your life review? What are you waiting for? I don't want to go to my life review. They're just going to tell me all the bad things I did." This guy was a gangster, so he was not looking forward to his life review. He's like, "I don't want to know. I don't want to." I was like, "Well, you got to go to it eventually."
Yeah.
And so my work then is working with the spirit and the human. But I learned in a lot of those experiences that you have to respect the will of the spirit and the will of the client when you're working as a psychic. So you can't just do whatever you want just because you can. One good example of perverting the will of another is a love spell. A lot of people think love spells are harmless, right? And, "Oh, I have a crush on this person. I'm going to do a spell to get them to like me." A lot of people do it when they're young. And they don't realize that a love spell can interfere with someone else's will, because you're trying to make them do something. And if you're powerful enough, if you have enough power, you might be able to do that. You might be able to cause somebody to suddenly like you who didn't like you yesterday. And that might not be a part of their life path. They're not supposed to be with you. They're supposed to be doing something else, or be supposed to be with somebody else. And so these are the kind of risks of being a psychic, is, you know, you could harm other people in terms of changing their will or changing their path.
Yeah. I mean, some really great examples. You know, the word dependency also surfaced for me when you were talking about the woman who just would keep coming, that example. But then you opened it up and said, well, somebody could just keep taking a person's money over and over and over to do these repeated sessions. And yeah, it's such a great point, because dependency, we want to be responsible and not have that power over the other person. Hello, it's Andrea. And in addition to being your host here at the podcast, I'm the founder of Mainstream Reiki, where bringing Reiki further into the mainstream is my mission. I offer quality Reiki classes of all levels to students attending live from around the world. And I've built a membership community as well to help Reiki people connect with each other through discussions, events, and Reiki practice. So if you're considering learning Reiki, or you already have, I invite you to visit mainstreamreiki.com to discover your next step in your Reiki journey. Thank you. And now back to the show. And so these have been great examples, but, you know, one area that I think I hear about this a lot is when a practitioner shares intuitive guidance or whatever that may be with the client. I hear a lot, "How do you know what to share?" That kind of thing. But also, I've had this myself in my own life where I've gone to practitioners and they had absolutely no business saying certain things to me. And I've never forgotten that. And, you know, you can't unhear something. And I think people do not take it seriously enough that if you're a practitioner, the client is coming to you. They see you as the one who knows at least more than they do, perhaps, in this certain realm. And so anything that we say, we have to be really careful about that. So I'd love to hear from you on that topic.
Yeah, that's one of the things I talk about too. You meant right before that you mentioned dependency. I also talk about that when the client becomes dependent on you, that's a risk. Financial exploitation of your client is a risk. Sexual exploitation of your client. And what you're talking about is the need to be kind of judicious in what we say and how we say it. Just because you know something doesn't mean you should share it. And sometimes the ego will prompt us to share everything because we're kind of showing off, right? We're so impressed with ourselves and we want them to be impressed with us. You know, we know this and this and this and this about you. Well, some of those things you don't need to share. One kind of rule that I had that illustrates this, when I was running my psychic and healing fair, I had several psychic and healers that worked for me and they would do little 15-minute, you know, sessions. I only had one rule for my psychics and healers. When I would start the fair, I would say to them, I don't want people to give information out about the 3Ds. And I would say, you know, don't tell someone they're dying. Don't tell people they have a deadly disease. And don't tell people they're getting divorced. I said this because this was a fair environment where people were walking off the street, coming in oftentimes out of curiosity for this little mini reading. And we didn't know them. They didn't know us. And we were probably never going to see them again in life. We didn't have their phone number, right? And so in that context, if you give somebody that kind of information, you don't know what they're going to do with it. You can't make sure they're okay. And when you tell someone that they're going to die, first of all, it can be a self-fulfilling prophecy. You could be wrong, right? No matter how accurate you are. Now, I always tell my students, the very best psychics in the world are 80 to 90% accurate. Those are the top psychics. Most of us are not the top psychics. So you should probably count on being 70% accurate. That means that 30% of the time, 20 to 30% of the time, you are wrong. And what if during that 20 to 30%, you're wrong about something like that? That's major. You can't afford to make that kind of mistake. And so you just don't tell people that they're dying or that they have cancer or some kind of disease that implies that they're dying. And also the divorce rule, I said, because domestic violence, you got to be careful when you talk to people about their relationships. It can result in some really bad effects. I had one psychic once who really pushed back. She only worked one time at the fair. She never came back. She was a very gifted psychic. And I was really sad to see her go. But she said, well, I give that kind of information out all the time. And I'm very accurate. And I had heard from people that she was very accurate. And I said, that may be the case. And if you have a client, you have a 1-hour session with them and you have their phone number and you want to give them that information, you feel like you have enough time to help counsel them through that information and make sure they're okay before they leave, that's fine. But you can't do that in a 15-minute session in a fair. You know, these are the kind of precautions that I think people need to make. And some psychics think, oh, I should just give whatever I get. People just need to hear it like it is. And I even sometimes had clients come to me in the fair and ask me certain questions like, am I going to get divorced? And I would say to them, you know what? I'm the wrong practitioner for you. I'm not going to be able to give you information like that. Maybe you could go see this other person. Because I had had too many clients come to me where I had seen that they had dangerous partners. For example, I told them their husband was having an affair. It was going to end very badly for them. Because their husband was dangerous, or their husband was going to take the children, or they were going to make their life miserable, you know, whatever. I could see that they weren't really equipped to handle the consequences of knowing that information. And I do think as psychics, we're responsible for that. We're responsible for making sure that our clients can handle the information that we give them. And we have to always be asking ourselves, is knowing this going to help them? Is it going to make their life better? It's not just enough for it to be true. It has to make their life better. You'll have that orientation if you think about this work as service work. And that's one of the things I talk about in the book is the traits of an ethical psychic. And one of the traits is being of service. You could be born with gifts and you could be super gifted, but it's not enough to have gifts. You have to know how they relate to your purpose. And we always have gifts on board to be of service. They're always of service. They're always there because they help us fulfill our purpose. They're not there just for showmanship or to make us feel good about ourselves or just to make a lot of money. And there's nothing wrong with making a lot of money with your gifts, but that's not the primary purpose of them. You know, that's a residual effect. It could be for some people.
Yeah. I love how you talked about it's not enough if it's just true, right? It could be true all day long, but that doesn't mean it passes the test to share it. And I just think that's phenomenal. And this idea of service, it was really hard for me to ever share anything with someone because I had just such a fear of being wrong. So that was my number one thing, because I guess early I realized it really does matter what we say and how we say it. So at least I got that early on. So it took me a lot to be able to say things. I think that it's such a good point that you're making. I guess I've just kind of felt my way through the years. And I think I've done okay. I'm sure I've screwed up, you know, along the way for sure too. But I think that's a wonderful reason that we're talking about this today, that the book is available because you wrote it, because I do think we need to talk about this more and more and help people. So many more people are learning these things. And this is such an important aspect. One of the things I would ask myself with my clients about sharing things in my internal dialogue, I would ask myself, are they going to leave here burdened? If I tell them that, is this going to be a weight that they're going to have to try to deal with or recover from? And if that was the case, I wouldn't say anything. That's just kind of the way I figured it out for myself. Being of service and helping them feel hopeful, joyful, and not that we're just here to only do that, but if people are coming for a session, a healing session, my perspective is I want them to feel empowered. I want them to feel better, hopeful, lighter, whatever that is. So that's just kind of how I navigated that. And the other thing too is, how would I feel if someone told me that? You know, I'm really big about that. Like I try to pretend I'm the other person kind of thing. But do you have any practical advice like that? Like in the moment, how do we know what might be best?
I agree with you. And that's one of the things I also say in the book is that we should endeavor to have them come out of the session feeling better than they felt when they came to us. That's important. One of the things that I do in the session is I look for confirmation again and again. So if I get something really serious, like let's say I get cancer. So keep in mind that I've been working as a medical intuitive primarily. I do a lot of other things, but most of my clients that have come to me over the last 12, 15 years have been for medical intuition. And so, you know, sometimes I will pick up deadly diseases and they are there for that. But one of the things I'll do is I'll seek to get the same information more than one way. So if it's something really serious, like I think I'm seeing a cancerous growth, I'm going to check it and double check it and triple check it. And if I don't give some piece of information, what will often happen is it will keep coming back in a different way. Everyone who's practiced knows this is what our teachers taught us is if you don't give out the information they're supposed to hear, you keep getting bugged with it.
Yes.
And that's also a sign that you're supposed to give it. If it just keeps showing up, keeps showing up. Now, sometimes there's a way to give information in a careful and loving way. And so I talk a lot about language. I think it's really important to learn how to language things. One of the things that I do is if I think somebody has something like that, I'm not going to use the word cancer because in our society, cancer is just equal to death in most people's minds. As soon as you say cancer, they're like, I'm dead. They start envisioning themselves dead. So then it can become a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? You can then speed somebody's decline up by telling them that they have cancer. But then you might think, well, they might need to know this, right? I have found creative ways of discussing it. So one of the things that I'll do with somebody is instead of telling them they have cancer, I'll suggest that they go get certain tests. And also as a medical intuitive, I think it's important to collaborate with health practitioners, right? I'm not giving them something in lieu of them going to a doctor. I'm helping them advocate for themselves so that they can get the right help. And so I might suggest, oh, you might want to consider getting this test to rule out cancer, right? I might language it like that. Or I might not even say cancer. I might say, you just might want to get this test to rule out possibilities, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes they'll take that information to their doctor and then they will find out at some point, oh, well, that test rules out cancer, but it won't be me telling them without them having additional support. You know, they're going to get the information from a doctor who's going to provide them with more resources than I can provide. Or I might say something like, if you don't make changes in your life, this could develop into cancer and you have to make changes right away, right? I might say something like, depending on how urgent I think it is, or if you don't go see somebody right away, this could become, right? And so in that way, I'm not telling them you already have this, you're a goner, right? I'm telling them, you know, you're empowered. You can make changes in your life. You have control over your destiny, which everybody does, right? None of us can give someone a prognosis because the future is not set. And so I will always give if-then conditional statements when I want to give information that's very challenging. I also tune into the person to see what are they available to hear. And this is something that I don't know if everyone is trained to do. I had to learn it over time where, you know, I was taught how to get information. And I think the last thing that I learned, which I just had to learn in practice, was after I get information, let me then tune into this person to see what are they ready to hear? Like, what's their emotional state? What's their belief system? And if you're not sure you're picking that up, you can kind of test it out. So you can ask their permission before you give certain information. So I might say to a person, you asked me about a symptom in your chest, but I'm picking up something in a different part of your body. Are you open to hearing about that? Or do you want me just to focus on the area that you're interested in, right? So a lot of times I stop and ask permission. You're asking me about this physical complaint, but I'm picking up some emotional components. Are you interested in the emotional causes? I'm picking up some spiritual causes for your condition. Are you open to that, right? And so sometimes you can just tune in and pick that up. And sometimes you can just verbally ask, is this information you want? And you can ask questions in the session, not about them, but like about what they want. I think it's really helpful to be really clear about what information the client came for and what they didn't come for. Because let's say someone comes to me, like here's an example. I had someone come to me once for a psychic reading about his relationship. And he's asking about his girlfriend. And while he's asking these questions, his dad shows up. And dad shows up and he's trying to give advice, relationship advice through me. But see, the guy didn't sign up for mediumship. How do I know he wants to talk to his dead father, right? So I had to stop and say, listen, I've got your dad here. Is that something you're open to? Would you like me to convey a message from your father, or should we just focus on? And he did. And so then the dad gave his relationship advice, which turned out to be, he said, very accurate and something his dad would have said too. And so you want to keep asking permission. You want to keep tuning in. Try to assess, what is this person available for? Like if someone's very emotionally overwrought about the relationship, that's not somebody I'm going to tell, hey, your husband's having an affair, right? Because they can't handle that information right now. And so I might language it differently. I might say, well, I see a disconnection between your husband and you. I see him with distracted, or he's not really focused on the relationship, right? I might find a different way to language it where they're still getting information that they need that will help them make decisions about their life without getting information that they just can't handle yet.
Wow.
Another thing I like to say in the moment to people is, I could be wrong.
Yes.
It's really important to have humility when you're working, which is hard when you're afraid that if I'm wrong, the client's not going to trust me, or they're not going to come back, or my reputation's going to be, right? When you're working as a professional psychic or healer, we do get concerned about our reputation and how people perceive me. And at a certain point, you have to overcome that.
Yes.
It took me a while. In my early years, I was very worried about being wrong. I was very worried about appearing to be legit. And I didn't want to say early on, oh, I could be wrong, right?
Yes.
Once I really built up my confidence, I was in a better position to be humble. And I would say to my clients too, the best psychics in the world are 80 to 90% accurate. I might be 80% accurate. That means I'm not going to always be right. So just know that everything I say isn't going to be right. If I'm going to give them something really heavy, I might condition it by saying, I could be wrong, but this is what I'm picking up.
Right. Being here with you now, hearing you say that, you know, I could be wrong. It just makes me, right here in this moment, relax. And it's so strange because we're not in a session or anything, but I guess I'm just imagining being in a session and then hearing the practitioner say that. But I can just imagine everything just must calm down a little bit when you convey that, don't you think?
Yeah, I think it's important. Being humble, it is something I've heard a lot from my clients and my students. That one of the things they admire about me is my humbleness. I think that does make people comfortable. It also makes you more human. It makes you more like them. And that makes them more comfortable. You're not some person on a pedestal who's got superpowers, but you're somebody who, you know, is not always right and doesn't think that they're all that just because they have gifts. Whenever we start thinking that we're so wonderful because we have gifts, that's when we make mistakes. The arrogance leads us to make mistakes. We become overly confident in our information. And then we miss stuff. We make a mistake and we don't even recognize it. And I often give the example of some of these famous like celebrity psychics and mediums. When you hear them on the radio or TV sometimes, it used to make me chuckle when I would hear them and they would say things like they'd give someone a reading on the radio. And then the person would say, no, I don't have a uncle that died. No, I don't have. And they would just keep saying no, right? And then the celebrity psychic would say, well, you know, just give it some time. You'll realize I'm right, you know. Of course, sometimes that is the case that you're giving information and the person just can't remember right now that what you're saying is true. And they're saying no, and it is really yes. But if someone keeps saying no, at some point you have to say, okay, I could be wrong, or let me tune back in. Or what is it about the way I'm delivering the information that the person can't recognize it? Obviously, I'm doing something wrong. You can't blame the client and say, oh, you're just saying no, but it's yes, or you just don't remember, or give it time, or you'll realize I'm right. And I know part of that is when you're a celebrity, you know, there's pressure, right? You're in the spotlight. People want you to be right. And I think people in that spotlight are maybe afraid to say, oh, okay, I got this one wrong.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. You know, there's a lot maybe they feel they have to live up to, big expectations maybe, but I totally relate because I've heard that myself. It's so kind of off-putting after a while.
Isn't it?
It is.
It's kind of invalidating you as the client.
Well, yeah. It's just pushing them off to the side, you know, as though they don't know better. I find it a bit disrespectful, but I do know. I've been in a situation where we were in an auditorium and there was a medium up front. And I knew if I went there, and both my husband and I went, and I knew that if we went, we would get singled out. I just knew it. And sure enough, it happened. And so I know what it's like to have that spotlight on you and they're saying these things. And my brain was kind of like locked up. So that does happen where you can't really remember some kind of obvious things in your life because you're just kind of in the spotlight. So it does happen, you know, so in all fairness, but yeah, I totally get that. This has just been a marvelous conversation. I'm so happy that we got to talk about this. And there's so much we could have talked about, but the book, again, go ahead, tell us the title, and you've got it there to hold it up for the video. Yes.
The Ethical Psychic, A Beginner's Guide to Healing with Integrity, Avoiding Unethical Encounters, and Using Your Gifts for Good.
Yeah, I love it. I have it. I recommend it for sure. And I not only recommend this for practitioners, if you are a client and you go to practitioners, I think it's good for them too. Know what to expect, know what to ask for in the people that you're engaging with to offer these services with you. Having education on both sides just helps everybody. It helps all the different modalities so we can raise the bar about how we're interacting, how we're delivering information, and being responsible. I don't see this as a book just for practitioners.
I have gotten that feedback. So I've had people come and say, you know, I'm not a practitioner. I'm a client looking for a psychic teacher, looking for a psychic spiritual leader. And this book was really helpful because it gave me like all the red flags to look for and the characteristics to look for.
Yeah, we need to have high standards for sure on both sides. And if people want to connect with you more, find out more about all the different things that you're offering and your classes and things like this, what do you have going on coming up here in the future and how can they contact you?
Okay, I have a website, which is Dr. Vest Medical Intuitive, and that's DRVEST, medicalintuitive.com. And I offer classes on my website. I have some online trainings that are, you know, on demand. You can take whenever you want. I teach medical intuition, teach a class on how to perceive auras. And my newest class is teaching you how to access your Akashic records.
Oh, that's exciting.
And I've been teaching those topics for years, and people were encouraging me to make them available in this format so that anybody could take them anywhere. And then I also teach classes for the Shift Network, and I have two classes coming up this year. The first one, which is going to be starting in May 2nd, and these are live classes. They're online, but they're live. The first one is on psychic development and soul growth. And that's a 7-week course. And then later in the year, in July, I'm going to be offering a much more extensive training, an 18-week training, medical mediumship and medical mysticism.
Oh.
I also have other courses on the Shift Network, which are available as on-demand, in Indigenous medical intuition, and then also an advanced Indigenous medical intuition course.
That's fascinating. It just is fascinating. Beautiful. Thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing about this really important topic and all the different work that you do. It's been great to have you.
Thank you. It's been fun to have this conversation.
And from myself and the team here at Beyond the Reiki Gateway, we'd like to say thank you to our listeners for all of your support, including leaving great reviews, becoming BTRG insiders, and sharing the show with your friends and family. Drop us a line at info@beyondthereikigateway.com anytime. Tell us what's on your mind and take great care. Until next time. Thank you for listening. And you can check the show notes or visit the website beyondthereikigateway.com to find out more about the podcast and connect with me. Please keep in mind that views and opinions expressed in the show don't necessarily reflect those of the podcast or anyone affiliated with its production or advertising. This program is presented for your entertainment only, and all information provided is to be utilized at the listener's own discretion. I, along with the BTRG team, hope you enjoy the show as much as we enjoy making it for you. Wishing you highest blessings until we meet again beyond the Reiki Gateway.